Welcome to Our Burning Questions, a professional learning podcast where we answer your most compelling questions about teaching, serving, and supporting multilingual learners. I'm your host, Jasmine Coaxum, and through our talks, I look forward to bringing the methods, philosophies, and stories behind teaching multilingual learners to light. Let's get into the show. Today, we are excited to welcome one of New York State TESOL's past presidents, Monica Baker. Monica has been in English as a new language teacher in the Hudson Valley for 18 years and serves on the Membership Professional Council of TESOL International. She holds national board certification and was a recipient of the 2022 Empire State Excellence in Teaching Award. Monica is the executive vice president of her local teachers association, as well as an active member of NYSET, the New York State United Teachers Union. She is also the chair of the Mid-Hudson Teacher Center Policy Board. And today, she will share information about her dynamic multi-age project-based summer program for multilingual learners. So hello, Monica Baker. We are so happy that you decided to join us here on Our Burning Questions today. As you already have heard from Monica's bio information, she is a past president of New York State TESOL. And so that is actually how we met. Now, I just want to give a little bit of background. I first saw Monica when she was in the midst of chairing the New York State annual conference. And when I saw her, I just thought, wow, she's this pillar of strength yet bundle of energy. And so I was just really, it really just excited me in terms of wanting to be a part of the organization. And then later on, a couple years later on, to join the membership. So thank you for that inspiration that you didn't know that you were giving out, Monica.
I did not know, but I'm glad my chaotic, hectic schedule inspired someone.
Okay, so we're going to just basically get started with what your current role in education is, just to kind of dive into maybe a few details about that. And sure. Yeah, so let's go with that first.
Okay, so I am an ENL teacher in the Hudson Valley. I'm currently working with grades K through three, but I've worked with L's at all different grade levels. And I've been doing this for about 18 years. I work at Weebatuck Central School District, which you may never have heard before because it's a very small rural school in the Hudson Valley in northeastern Dutchess County. And when I started here, like I said, about 18 years ago, I think my entire roster of students was about 10 kids. We had a very, very small multilingual population. And so I had, you know, groups of one or two kids at a time, like an ENL teacher's dream, right? But very quickly, the demographics of my school district changed. And now 20% of our student body are multilingual. And so that we had that rapid shift, a huge influx of immigrants, mostly from Guatemala. And many of my students actually speak Quechua as their first language and Spanish as their second. And now they're learning English as their third language. So it's a unique situation here because, you know, I think whenever a school district has that that change, that pretty fast-paced change from a largely white English-speaking school district to a more diverse multilingual school community, it's a shift. It's a shift for everyone. It's a shift for the students. It's a shift for the community, for the teachers, the administrators, everyone. So, but I've been really excited and honored to be part of that shift here. And I've really dedicated my career to making sure that our multilingual students feel engaged and empowered and part of our school community.
Now, I was originally going to ask you what inspired you to become an educator of elves, but it sounds more like this was an organic change. Is that right?
So, well, I mean, I will say that I do have a story that inspired me. I didn't know at the time it was going to really inspire me to be an educator of elves, but when I was in high school, I remember I was in the high school library and just hanging out with some of my friends during a study hall or whatnot. And I remember there were two students speaking Spanish at a table in my high school. And I remember the librarian came over to them and told them, "You have to speak English." And I remember thinking, like, even as like a 16-year-old, what? That's crazy, you know, and the way she acted like it was a rule, and this wasn't even a class, it was like a study hall or just like a break during the day in the school library. And, you know, at the time, I didn't do anything and I didn't say anything. I just kind of, but it really resonated with me. And I just thought about how crazy that was, that that students were being told they could not communicate to each other.
Okay. And so is that what it kind of,
hold on, I'm just going to have
to. Yeah. It's a phone call, right?
Sorry.
Okay.
So I, even as a teenager, I just remember thinking that that was so crazy and inappropriate for an educator to tell two people not to speak in the language that they speak in. And I was just really shocked by it. It really stuck with me. And my first career was actually as a TV producer. And so I became an educator a little bit later in my career path. And when I was thinking about the idea of going back to school and becoming an educator and looking at different program options, when I discovered the career path of being an educator of elves, that story came back to me, that anecdote of that those students being told they could not speak in their home language in the school library. And so that little blip in time, that little moment really has impacted my career path, because I want to make sure that language is valued, all languages are valued, and that students feel that speaking more than one language is an asset to any school community, and that we can be proud of being multilingual, and that our multilingual students are intelligent, they are well-rounded, and they have so much to bring to our classroom and our school community. So that moment, I still think about that moment, you know, pretty often throughout my life, because it really did have an impact on me and the work I do.
And I really think, I mean, in terms of education, let's hope we've come full circle in terms of these ideas, right? That's a very antiquated idea at this point to think that speaking another language isn't an asset, right? And that you just kind of needed to scrape away all traces of your, you know, your native tongue if you wanted to come here to the U.S., study in the U.S., and be successful in the U.S. I think, yeah, maybe there's maybe there's a little bit of a remnants of that mindset, but I'm hoping it's quickly being erased by, you know, the mindset of speaking multiple languages is an asset, right?
As we I do think we still have work to do though in that in that regard. I think that, you know, you travel to Europe, for example, and everyone that you encounter speaks more than one language. But in the United States, we still have, you know, a decent percentage of the population that is monolingual. And even those of us who've all taken classes in a language other than English in middle school, high school, and yet we don't speak it, we don't use it, we don't feel proficient in that language, and it, of course, fades away. And so we remain this monolingual society. And then as monolingual educators, that's where we need to be able to put ourselves in the shoes of our students who are coming to our classroom speaking a language other than English. And we still have, I think we still have work to do in that area, shifting our perspective and remembering that what it's like to be a child in a classroom that is trying to access learning, trying to do their best, but they're still not understanding what is going on around them. And the extreme amount of scaffolding and support that our students need in order to feel comfortable and successful in a monolingual classroom.
Okay, so I would like to know, obviously you speak Spanish, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and I would like to know if there was any particular experience that, like, positive experience that you had that helped you kind of realize that you wanted to do more of whatever happened during that experience for your students on their path in terms of language learning.
So I consider language learning a work in progress. I don't consider myself proficient in Spanish. I consider myself a Spanish language learner, and my students are great teachers and continue to work with me every day so that I can expand my vocabulary, because I want to also be a model for them that I'm learning Spanish and you're learning English, and that we work together as a team in order to advance our language skills. And as I mentioned earlier, that many of my students also speak Quechi, which is a Mayan language, an indigenous language. And, you know, we're trying to learn that as well. I have my Quechi cheat sheet on my whiteboard where, you know, I can speak some phrases in Quechi, and the kids love it. And it's, I think that, you know, when we shift our mindset away from what feels safe and comfortable as educators, you know, when we're willing to say, we're going to put ourselves out there and try something new, even if it makes us feel uncomfortable. You know, when I say something in Quechi to a parent, they are so, they're so excited that here is this, you know, this white woman in rural New York trying to speak their language. And when we put ourselves out there and just try, that's where those connections form that are so positive. And of course, my Spanish is not perfect. My Quechi is, like, you know, toddler level, but I'm trying it, I'm using it, and it really sets the tone in and outside of the classroom that language is something that has value and should be shared and celebrated. And I hope that is contagious. I hope that others pick up on that or want to reconsider how they can make sure that their classroom is a classroom that clearly values diverse languages.
Okay, so I really love that. I love language learning is basically a work in progress. I think that it's important to highlight that idea because a lot of times people do see it as like, okay, you're studying this language and then you just get to this top level and then that's it. you're just, that's it. And it's never it. Even if you're at the most, what you consider the most proficient level, it's really never it. There's always something new that you can learn. So I love that you highlighted that. So you took us into the classroom. You mentioned classrooms. So I would like to now go ahead and shift our focus to this project that you are currently doing. You talked about a summer program, right? So is something that is going to be coming up in the summer or something that is recurring during the summers for multi-age, multilingual learner students?
Yes. So very early in my career as an educator, I started a multi-age summer program. And really, it started out as multi-age just because I felt like, well, if I just do a program for, let's say, fifth graders, what about the fourth graders? So I wanted to make it as inclusive as possible. So I said, okay, I'd love to do a multi-age summer program so that my students have, you know, an opportunity that's free over the summer and they're still continuing their education, but yet we're having more, you know, project-based learning and field trips and different activities. But what started out as multi-age, which it was probably maybe, you know, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, has expanded over the years to the point where I've had kids as young as 3 and as old as 16 coming together in this format that's almost like a one-room schoolhouse. That's the best way I can describe it. Having siblings come, cousins. I really open it to all of my students and then even my former students, because many of the kids who, let's say, were at middle school level now, they'll say, oh, Miss Baker, is it possible I can come, you know, help out at summer school? So they say help out. Then they feel like they're, you know, almost like working. And so I say, sure, come help out. And then it really sets that tone of the older kids support the younger kids. We have time to all work together. Little kids are reading to older kids. Older kids are helping to tie a shoe or help get, you know, get someone's snack open. So it's really a program that I'm really proud of, because when you bring all of those children together, and like I said, many of the kids end up being siblings or cousins or neighbors, it really creates a classroom community dynamic like none other, because we do feel truly like a school family during that summer program, that we're all supporting each other and that we're all working on thematic units and projects, but we're all accessing those projects or that information from wherever we're at. So for example, a 3-year-old who comes is going to get something different out of whatever project we're doing than say a 14-year-old. But yet we make sure that everyone can be engaged, be a part of it. So I'll give you an example. So we usually have, you know, I usually set like a weekly theme. And when I say we, it's because I really want the students to help come up with the themes we do, the programs we do. Last summer, we did a week of just STEM projects. Every day, I gave them a STEM challenge and that they worked in groups. And like, you know, the groups, like I said, ranging all different ages. One of them was to make a solar oven. So I provided them with a ton of different materials and aluminum foil and cardboard and plastic wrap and then some like s'mores type material, some chocolate and different things. And they worked in groups to try to figure out how they could get that chocolate to melt onto those crackers. And they all came up with their own designs. And even the youngest of students were, you know, ripping cardboard and figuring out where they wanted to put it or decorating the solar oven. And it was completely, obviously, hands-on, student-led. All I gave them was the challenge. I like to call it a challenge. Here's your challenge. And they, you know, they worked together and discussed it and planned and tried different things. And sometimes they, you know, they would take the whole thing apart and start over again. And that's the kind of unique programming I try to set up over the summer program. I don't even call it summer school because that almost sounds very formal and traditional. We call it summer program. Some kids actually call it camp because that's how they view it, like something very different than traditional school. So it's a program that I really look forward to. And what's funny is that I'll have students as early as in like September or October say, "Hey, Miss Baker, are we doing summer school again? Are we doing summer program again?" I'm like, "Yeah, we have to wait a little bit, but yes, we will do it again." They look forward to it because it is a unique experience.
Wow. So you said every day. So I'm trying to get the logistics here. So they, during the summer, they meet every single day. And then what's
it's only 4 weeks in the summer. So it's 4 weeks, but Monday through Friday during those 4 weeks. And we have a partnership with the local community center. So they provide breakfast and lunch, free breakfast and lunch for all the students. So they, it's really a 4 week program that gets them back into school, but a different kind of school. And yeah, we have transportation. We kind of fought over the years to make sure that there was door-to-door transportation during the summer for every student who wanted to come. And I really try to spread the word to ensure that for example, we're doing kindergarten screening right now. The kids are getting ready to come to kindergarten in September. And I'll give the information to incoming kindergarten parents. And those kids have never even been to the school before, but sometimes they'll sign them up for the summer program and that'll be their first introduction to school. And it's really great for those kids because then by the time regular school starts in September, they've already spent a few weeks here. They've had all these unique experiences, they've made friends, and it really sets them off on the right foot.
Wow, that's a really nice way for them to get acclimated before the actual school year begins. And so it's like, it's school hours, is it? Like, I mean, it's the standard amount of hours.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a shorter, they leave in the early afternoon. So it's a little bit shorter than a full school day. But even within that shortened day, in addition to the projects, like I discussed, we do reading groups, we do some writing. Writing is usually tied in with whatever project we worked on. We have centers. I include some time for phonics skills. So we pack a lot into that day. And it can be super challenging for me to figure out how to obviously meet the needs of all of those diverse learners. Some kids speak, are only Spanish who come in or only Quechua. And some of the students who attend are proficient in English and have been here for many years. But yet it all ends up working out, like I said, because of that way of everyone supporting each other and everyone really operating like a team in that program and understanding that, okay, if I see it, like the older kids just kind of naturally become leaders. And if they see a little kid who needs help with something, they start to just jump right in and take on that role. So it really brings out unique kind of skills sometimes that you wouldn't normally recognize maybe. And if a child was in a class with all same age peers, but then sometimes in this environment, you say, wow, that student is really a leader, or she would be a great teacher, or he's really great at reading to younger kids. So sometimes students really shine in that program in ways you don't typically see or get to experience in regular school year.
So it sounds really like a very comprehensive type of development that they could get in this program. But if you had to highlight maybe bullet point three of the biggest benefits that you've seen as a result of this program, what would they be?
So I think that when you incorporate project-based learning, some kids are still a little bit unsure of the idea of taking some sort of materials or some sort of problem and just running with it. Some kids are very used to like waiting for directions and then following those directions. Mm. So I really like giving students those challenges where they don't necessarily get told what to do. Because it really forces them to say, wait a minute, I can do what I want. I can come up with my own idea am I allowed to do this? You know, some kids are really hesitant. And I think it's a really great experience, even for a very young learners, to sometimes have that freedom to just explore, play with materials, try different things, not to have a right or wrong answer with everything they're doing. And I think that's a really nice type style of learning when you're working with multilingual students, because sometimes multilingual students can feel very unsure of, you know, what to say, what to do, is this the right answer? But when you're working with materials, much like art, you know, art class where it's more free, sometimes you see multilingual students or really timid students kind of really shine in that environment because they don't have to get the right answer or they don't have to necessarily raise their hand and speak about something. Sometimes they can just kind of explore. And for our newcomers, it's really great. It's a really great opportunity to just use materials, explore. So the project-based learning gets kids out thinking outside of the box. And I think it's really important for, you know, when we talk about ensuring that all of our students are college or career ready, you know, they need those problem-solving skills. So I think when you use project-based learning, it really gets kids comfortable with the idea that they can come up with their own ideas. They can take challenges. They can take risks. They can take on the challenge and they can take risks and change things and that it's okay. The other benefit is the teamwork part, the collaboration among students, especially among multi-age students, because remember, this is a program with all multilingual students. So when I'm kind of outside, you know, watching, because I just float around and help and facilitate, but really I want the students to have ownership over the projects we do. So it's really an amazing thing to kind of just be a fly on the wall and listen. And you hear students using multiple languages within a conversation, going back and forth. And, you know, one child is explaining their idea in English and then they flip and then they'll explain it in Quechua to another student. And so they learn to communicate their ideas and they learn to truly use language in order to get their points across to different people in one conversation. It's really amazing to watch because they are so engaged and they are excited. And in that environment where they don't feel like they are being judged, they don't feel like I said, like they have to have the right answer. They're just discussing and problem solving and being excited. And that's when like their language skills really are shining as well. And they realize that they can use more than one language to communicate to each other, to their peers in order to solve these problems or complete these challenges. So they don't even realize that they're practicing their English or they're not thinking like that, but they are. And they're using new words, they're using you know, phrases that we're going over, but using them in a practical sense because they're just really focused on whatever project it is that they're working on. So I think that was two things. Maybe one other.
Okay,
was that
go
three?
Ahead.
I got
go,
it.
Go ahead. I think you did, but go ahead. What were you gonna add?
the last thing I was gonna say is just like that sense of community, not only for the students, but the parents. This program has really helped me to form even stronger connections with the parents of the students, because when they see that school is not just, you know, September to June, that school can be different things. School can be a place for your children to play and explore and become leaders and engage with different projects and go on special field trips. The parents start to sometimes shift their perspective of what school is and what it isn't, and the role that I play in supporting and advocating for their students. So I think the program has really helped to really solidify my relationship with the school community, with the school community of multilingual families. And it's in strengthening that relationship, I think that I've become a person that is truly viewed as a resource, not just for academics or language, but where families feel safe to be able to open up to me about other issues going on. And we know that, you know, students need to make sure that everything feels stable in their life before they can really learn. And so that relationship with parents is really important in order to make sure everyone has what they need, is comfortable, safe, and stable before we can engage in learning.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, basically, I would say to recap, right, for everybody, that this project basically enables students to foster critical thinking, or rather think outside of the box. It allows them to build confidence across ages, right? And then there's also a sense of community, maybe like bolstering or community collaboration, community empowerment. So, and these are really, I feel, three really strong pillars of building students up, right? And so what I'm sure a lot of people might be thinking at this point, and they're like, oh, it sounds fantastic, and listen at, you know, all of these great benefits from implementing this program. So is it easy to implement this type of project for other teachers who may be considering doing something like this?
So I would say yes. I mean, I like I said, I really love this program, and I would encourage any educators, any school districts to consider ways to bring a similar program to your school. I would maybe start a little smaller in the beginning before opening up to such a wide range of ages of students. I started off small and really built up the program, but there's often funding available for these types of programs. So I would encourage educators who are thinking about this to, you know, talk to your principal, talk to your department lead, talk to your business administrator, and just say, are there funds available for this kind of program? And start there, because, you know, you want to make sure that you have the funding in place. And then really, then it just becomes the practical things. How many students are going to come? Where are you going to house the program? Is there transportation available? Is food going to be available and all that? But then really beyond that, that's where the creativity starts. And that's where the program can really be whatever you and your students want it to be. Once the logistics are taken care of, that's where you can really be creative and make the program whatever you want. We've done, over the years, we've done every theme under the sun. We've done themes involving space. We've done themes involving archaeology. We've done themes involving the rainforest. We've done themes involving indigenous cultures. So really any themes that the students are interested in, you can make an amazing program out of. And it's just a matter of, you know, having those open discussions with your students, especially the older ones, and saying, what do you want to do? What do you think about this? Get their buy-in. That's how you get engagement. And then, you know, help them come up with how the program's going to run, how the program's going to operate. And like I said, those older kids really help me tremendously. They love that, but they kind of almost think of themselves as being like, you know, camp counselors in a way, because they really truly do bring so many ideas to the table and help to make the program a success. So yeah, just once the logistics are taken care of, then that's where the fun begins.
Okay, so now this is a summer program, right? I'm going to just go back to pandemic times a little bit, to a program which you said was the most successful family engagement program that you'd ever been involved with. So I'm referring to your family literacy program that you started during the pandemic, where every Wednesday night students and their parents joined you on Zoom for bilingual books, discussion, hands-on projects, and it really grew into a complete family affair with siblings, cousins, and even grandparents joining in. There was a quote that I thought was really amazing, really, really cute. You said that in reference to this family literacy program, one second grader said, "Wednesdays are special because it's like Miss Baker is in our house reading us a bedtime story." I thought that was just the cutest thing ever. And so I'm bringing this up to see if maybe you have something like that. Did you continue to do something like that after the pandemic? Is it, or what, or maybe I'll rephrase a little bit, maybe something like that. Or is there something similar that you're doing now beyond the summer program that you have developed?
So yeah, the program that you're referring to actually continues to this day.
Awesome. That's so great. That's great. Okay.
So that program, you know, it was kind of, I'll tell the short version of the story, but that program was going to be an in-person program. And the launch date was March 2020. So I had this whole program planned where I was going to kind of model this program after like story hour at the library, where parents bring their kids to a library and then there's a book and sometimes a craft or a song. And, you know, instead of just having that at the library, I thought, well, why can't we have that maybe once a week at the school? So I got all the resources ready. I got books, bilingual books and craft supplies and all this stuff. I was ready to launch. And of course, March 2020 comes around and we all know how that went. So I had all these supplies, these books and boxes of things sitting around, and we were all, you know, in our homes. And I was like, what am I going to do? You know, we had no end in sight to the pandemic. We didn't know what was going to happen. And I had all these boxes and I said, I wonder if this would work on Zoom. So I asked families and I said, what do you think about this? Would this work? And families were, parents were interested. And remember, this was like a really crazy time where parents had a lot of questions about what's happening with the pandemic and schooling and the schedules and everything. So the first time I did it on Zoom, I said, we're going to, you know, come together on Zoom. I invited all the parents of my students. I said, we're going to have an informational session on Zoom so I could try to help parents figure out, we didn't really have any answers at that point. You know, everything was up in the air, but I wanted to bring everyone together to kind of explain what we knew, what was happening. And parents were really, they showed up and they were really grateful on Zoom to have that connection. So then at the end of that meeting, I said, would you like to have another meeting like this, but involve your kids, have your kids, and I'll also do a story and I'll also update you on any information that you need to know about what's going on with pandemic learning, right? So the parents said, oh, yes, yes, we'd love to have another one. And a great thing happened in that moment, because instead of me saying, okay, we're going to do it at Tuesday at 5:30, the parents on Zoom started to talk to each other and say, you know, in Spanish, and say, what, you know, well, Mondays don't work for me, I work. And then another parent said, yes, Saturdays don't work for me. They brainstormed together. And what they came up with was Wednesdays at 8 o'clock worked for the most people. Now, if they had asked me to choose a date and time, I never would have chosen Wednesday at 8 o'clock. I would have thought, oh, that's in the middle of the week. It's kind of very late. Maybe people are too tired, but that's what they chose. So I listened to what they said and I said, okay, Wednesday at 8, we're going to do this. And it started off, like I said, more information with a story attached, but then it really transitioned over time to predominantly what I initially had planned, a bilingual story hour. We read a book in English, we read a book in Spanish, and then there's some sort of very simple craft or drawing or game that connects to what we read about. But I also am there to give parents who are Zooming in as well any updates and reminders, like, oh, there's a second grade field trip next week. Make sure you bring in the, send in the permission slip. And that program, I never would have thought it would be continuing in 2023, even after school is quote unquote back to normal. But the families keep coming every week. And so I couldn't pull the plug on it because it really is. I mean, it really is also kind of a unique, special thing. And the kids show up, you know, on Zoom in their pajamas and they look forward to it. And it's a unique opportunity to connect in the comfort of your own home. I mean, I know we did that with virtual learning during COVID, but now some of my younger kids, you know, they weren't in school. They weren't doing virtual learning during COVID. So this is just like a special little bedtime story. And I think it's nice for the parents to see some modeling of how I read and talk to the kids, because you know, it models for the parents the types of questions you can ask, you know, when you're reading with little kids. And some of the parents, you know, will chime in, like I'll say, oh, how do you say this in Spanish? And the parents will chime in and help me out. And some of the kids who don't know how to read in Spanish because they haven't, they've never attended school in a Spanish educational environment. They've only attended class with in Armenian, New York, where I teach, and their teachers are teaching in predominantly English. Many of them have never learned to read in Spanish. And so this is also a unique opportunity where some of them are actually now learning to read in Spanish because of these weekly story hours. And some of them will volunteer to read. You know, they'll say, oh, Miss Baker, can I try to read the next page? And it's just a really special kind of fun environment because, you know, it's just different. It's different than the regular school day, just like the summer program. It's just a different environment. It's casual, it's fun. And, you know, whoever shows up on Wednesday at 8 o'clock is welcome to come. That's what how we do it every week. There's no sign up or anything. So the families know if they're available, jump on Zoom at 8 o'clock on Wednesdays, and we have a great time every week.
It's a really outstanding way to encourage the notion of education as a community effort, which I think is sometimes really largely missing for our elves. Yeah. So, okay, great. Now, what I want to ask you kind of before we wrap up is about where people can find information about your work, or if you have any upcoming projects or publications that you'd like to make the audience aware of. I did come across one of your chapters in a book titled, it was published in September of last year, titled Handbook of Research on Fostering Social Justice Through Intercultural and Multilingual Communication. And your chapter was on empowering the voices of young multilingual learners in the ESL classroom. So maybe do you want to, there's one thing that that was mentioned in terms of what this chapter was about. I know that it focuses on 6 classroom practices that elevate the student voice, including what we have discussed here, which is project-based learning. But then you also talk about restorative circles and debate, reflect on their identity and issues of social justice, and then their work being published. So I guess I want to quickly just ask about these restorative circles and debate before you kind of tell us about any upcoming projects that you might have down the pipeline.
Sure. So restorative circles, if you're not familiar with them, are a practice in which, and this is not, this actually stems from the criminal justice system initially, where reforms in the criminal justice system were being considered. And instead of punitive measures being taken when someone committed some sort of offense, looking at it more of a way of repairing the harm that was committed by a certain act. So an example is, you know, if someone assaults someone else, instead of just that person is charged with a crime and arrested and serves time, the restorative aspect of that crime would be that then the person who committed the offense can consider the harm they've done to the person, physical and emotional harm, and consider ways to repair that harm through dialogue. When possible, coming together with the person who was harmed with any kind of offense and having dialogue with that person or their family to try to talk it out, to try to come to a better place collectively and through communication. And so this practice has made its way now into many different environments, including schools, where schools are considering restorative circles being implemented as an alternative to suspensions, where instead of a student does something and they're suspended, removed from the environment, allowing an opportunity for students to work on solving whatever happened together collectively with the support of course, counselors, administrators, teachers, so that things can be talked through, that students' voices can be heard, that in a facilitated dialogue, so that everyone has the opportunity to speak, and sometimes a lot of good can come out of just allowing that time to talk things out, which sometimes we're so busy in all of our lives, in education and the bell ringing and moving to the next class and this and that, that sometimes we don't slow down and allow for really, really significant dialogue to take place that's going to be able to help students to move forward past certain things that have happened.
So I love that.
In my own classroom, though, like I've done some restorative circles in trainings and professional development, but I thought, you know, how can I bring that type of dialogue into my own classroom, working with very young children? And so I didn't plan on doing it initially, but last year when the attack on Ukraine began, one of my third graders came into the room and just burst out, like, you know, what's going on with Ukraine? What's happening? I heard it's World War III. And he had so much to say and so many feelings and a lot of misinformation. And so I completely threw out what we were going to do that day. And I said, let's all talk. And I put them all in a circle, because clearly this child had a lot on his mind. And then others started, you know, expressing their ideas and concerns and misinformation as well. So I brought them all in a circle and I said, okay, this is what we're going to do. And I borrowed that restorative circle kind of format where everyone gets a turn to speak. We slow things down. We don't interrupt each other. Everyone gets the opportunity to say what they're thinking about, what their concerns are related to whatever topic. So I said, okay, I hear that there's a lot on your mind related to what's going on in Ukraine. So we're going to go around the circle. And we had like a passing item. Like, I think I was holding like a little stuffed owl, and, you know, we use that as like a talking stick, right? So we passed it around. And when you had the owl, you were allowed to ask a question or say what you were thinking about, your concerns, what you had heard about the invasion of Ukraine. And these were 8-year-olds. They were, you know, young kids. And we tried this out, and they were so mature about it. And if they had nothing to say, that's perfectly acceptable. But bringing that in, that format where they were able to have that time and space with no interruptions, that was the first time I tried it. And I asked the kids afterwards, what'd you think of that? Just that different kind of style of communicating. And they loved it. They said, I collected their feedback actually and wrote it down. And they said they really liked having that time. They liked that no one was stepping on their words, is what, you know, we say if someone interrupts. They liked just being able to talk about what they were worried about. And so that was the first time, kind of an impromptu time, I tried it. And then I've done it many times since, to talk about sometimes heavier issues that come up in education. Right. And instead of just saying we don't have time for that, using this kind of circle environment to talk about things, so that we're, and the circle is important because we're all looking at each other. We're all part of that circle. We're all engaged, and we're all showing respect to whoever is talking. One time another student called another student gay, and we did a circle to talk about that. To talk about what that meant, how it was used, when how that word is a label and how we only label ourselves. We don't label other people. We talked about how, of course, you can say you are gay, but you can't call someone gay. You know, we had a very deep conversation that day that only I think would have been possible in that type of restorative or that type of circle dialogue.
Right. Because if these types of issues are on our students' minds, they can't, how can they really like focus? Right.
Of course.
So,
yeah.
So it's remember, really good for them to have this outlet. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And these are all everything I'm talking about. These are with multilingual students. So some of our circles are taking place in Spanish. Some are taking place, you know, there's Spanish and English going on to ensure right. that everyone is able to get their point across, their feelings across.
Well,
so I explain that further in that chapter of that book and how I've used the circles in different ways to really empower student voice.
Okay, great. Now, I definitely want to be cognizant of your time because you have been really wonderful in allowing me to record this with you during your lunchtime. So before I let you go and let you go back to all this wonderful teaching and engagement that you need to get back to, I really want to know from you what you think is a burning question that today educators should consider in order to improve their service to the L community.
So I really challenge every educator, and including myself, because I think about this almost every day. I really challenge every educator to reflect on the multilingual students in your class, especially your newcomers, and really consider what percentage of the day that student does not understand what is going on. I just had a new student start 2 days ago. So this is weighing heavily on my mind because we all have the best intentions for our students. But when you actually put yourselves in the shoes of a newcomer and we get so caught up in, you know, our daily routine and this is what we're teaching and this is what, and yet we constantly need to reflect on, how is this lesson? How is my newcomer accessing this lesson? And how much of the day does the student just feel lost? Because we need to do better with that. And I think we all can do better, but it takes work, it takes commitment, it takes collaboration. And I often encourage the strategy of shadowing when possible. Taking a step out back away from your class or shadowing a student in a colleague's class and just looking at like how much of the time are they engaged? How much of the time do they understand what is being taught to them? And looking for those periods of time where they don't seem to understand and reflecting on what we can do differently. So I think there's more work to be done. All of us have to embrace that and reflect on our own practices, and we can continue to grow and support L's more efficiently, more effectively.
Okay, educators, please simmer on that. Simmer on that question. Okay, so it has been such a pleasure talking with you today, Monica. And we definitely look forward to any further leadership that you plan on going into and any further work or projects that you have coming up in the future. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to Our Burning Questions, produced by Mid-State Auburn at OCM BOCES. If you would like to learn more about today's guest or any of the resources we discussed, please visit Mid-State Auburn's webpage at ocmboces.org. That's ocmboces.org. Join us next time where we hope to answer more of your burning questions.